So, Brandon, what did you do this morning?
That's a great question, Rose.
Thank you.
I woke up. It's important in any day.
How you start a morning, really.
I groggily got out of bed, stumbled to the kitchen, and I started making us some coffee.
Okay, so envision this. You woke up early, you're groggy, you put a lot of effort into this beautiful warm mug of caffeine.
It's true. Hear that, people?
Yes. It takes him a few minutes, and it's a labor of love. And I've meandered in, bright and beautiful, which is how I wake up.
Every morning. It's a dream, folks.
And you hand me a cup of coffee, to which I decline blankly.
Absolutely not.
I do not need it.
Yes, you do.
I am dead.
No, you're not.
I tell you that I am dead and that my body is actively rotting away. And then I ask to be taken to the morgue. Hello, welcome to Brain Fluke. I'm Rose Stacy.
And I'm Brandon Ryder. She's the beauty.
And I'm the brains.
And I'm just happy to be here.
And together, we explore the most bizarre and unusual,
but very real,
brain abnormalities that distort a person's reality.
It's our first episode.
Woo! And we're going to be discussing the walking corpse delusion, scientifically known as Cotard syndrome, after the 19th century French neurologist Jules Cotard.
Quick note, this episode deals with self-harm and mental illness. While we like to keep this podcast light and fun, we do take mental health very seriously. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental illness, we encourage you to speak with a professional. Okay, so let's get back to this. I gotta hear it out. You're in the kitchen and you tell me you're dead and you ask to be taken to the morgue. I would be terrifying. Is this something that actually happens?
Yes, those details were actually taken directly from a patient's case study. Her name was Mrs. L. We will be discussing her in more detail later, but those are very real and very common symptoms of Cotard syndrome. A person affected with Cotard syndrome may believe any of the following delusions: that they do not exist, that they are dead, that they are putrefying and actively rotting away, or that they have lost all of their blood and or internal organs. This feeling of rotting away can be felt all over their entire body or in regards to specific organs, limbs, or even their soul.
So this is where somebody thinks they're dead, but they're actually alive.
Exactly.
It's like a reverse Sixth Sense, like a reverse Bruce Willis here, right?
A Silo Ecrub, if you will. That's Bruce Willis backwards.
So, like, spoiler alert. Bruce Willis was dead the whole time, but he thought he was alive.
Exactly. But in these cases, spoiler alert, they're alive, but they think that they're dead.
Right. That is so scary.
It is important to note that Cotard syndrome is a symptom of another, often larger condition, and it's not a disease itself. Cotard syndrome is incredibly rare, with only about 200 known cases worldwide since the 1800s. It is not clear what causes Cotard syndrome, but most cases have been reported in patients with a history of neurological, psychiatric, and medical disorders, especially depression, anxiety, and substance abuse. Delusions are common in diseases affecting both hemispheres, such as degenerative diseases.
And a degenerative disease is something like multiple sclerosis, MS, or arthritis, right?
Exactly. Sometimes patients will have physical damage to their brains, which can be the result of a stroke, a tumor, a blood clot, or a physical injury to the brain, but that is not always the case.
So you mentioned this Mrs. L story and how she requested to be taken to the morgue?
Yes. In 2008, a 53-year-old woman known as Mrs. L.
Can we just call her Lydia?
Sure. I love the name Lydia.
It's much more personal.
Beautiful. Yes. Lydia informed her family that she was dead and rotting away. She told them that she was a corpse and she smelled like rotting fish.
She thinks she's a dead body rotting away in the kitchen right there. So her family immediately calls 911 and thankfully she's taken to the hospital.
Once examined, she admits to experiencing extreme hopelessness. While there, she suffers from decreased appetite and excessive drowsiness. She even refuses to eat and spends most of her time alone, neglecting her hygiene. She also demonstrates paranoia and expresses fears that paramedics were trying to burn down her and her family's house. In Lydia's case, there was no visible cause of her delusions, such as physical damage to the brain, and after organic causes of her symptoms are ruled out, her family agrees to allow the doctors to administer an antipsychotic used to treat schizophrenia called quetiapine.
Quetiapine.
In combination with an antidepressant known as bupropion.
Bupropion.
Just in case I don't know how to pronounce it, it just makes it all the better if you sing it.
Her family visited her in the hospital daily with homemade meals to try to get her to eat, and they encouraged her to take her medication. When she refused, they were able to gain custody over her given the state of her mind, and they were able to legally mandate that she take her medicine.
Thankfully, with the help of her family, Lydia was able to make a successful recovery. She denied having any nihilistic or paranoid delusions and hallucinations upon discharge, and she expressed hopefulness about her future and a desire to participate in psychiatric follow-up care.
The scariest part of this to me is that she was unwilling to be treated at all due to her nihilistic delusions. Like, what's the point in her brain? If she's dead, why would you ingest food? Why would you need sleep? Why would you? You can't give treatment to someone who doesn't want it. Her case demonstrates the importance of having a support system, like a family, while you're experiencing symptoms of Cotard syndrome or any mental illness.
And with a condition like Cotard syndrome, it is so important that the doctors are able to work with the patient to figure out a tailored form of care for them.
You mentioned that she was prescribed medication meant to treat schizophrenia. Is that common? Are patients with Cotards more likely to also be suffering from schizophrenia, or like first and foremost suffering from schizophrenia?
Not necessarily. The presence of Cotard syndrome within the context of schizophrenia is super rare. It's less than 1%. And that area of study remains to this day very under-researched. However, in the case of Mr. C, a 58-year-old Navy veteran, he suffered from religiously mediated Cotard syndrome in the context of schizophrenia. So he had schizophrenia with Cotard syndrome as a symptom of having schizophrenia.
Okay, Mr. C, that's just not going to work. Let's call him Clyde.
Craig, okay.
Craig.
Clyde.
Ooh, I like Craig. Let's
Clyde.
Do Craig.
Clyde, okay.
Craig had a 15-year diagnosis of schizophrenia, along with a substance use disorder. And in this situation, he had a traumatic brain injury caused by falling off of a moving train earlier in his life. His sister actually mentioned that Craig, we said? Craig. His sister actually mentioned that Craig suffered his first psychiatric break during childhood. He was prescribed medication at that time, but his parents, who were very religious, preferred to treat his condition with prayer. And they refused to administer medication at that time, unfortunately. Many years later, Craig was brought into the hospital by his sister after calling the Veterans Crisis Line. Upon admission, the family reported that Craig was taking the antidepressant venlafaxine.
Venlafaxine!
Along with quetiapine. Oh, we're supposed to say it after I do it. Quetiapine, which you'll remember.
We'll get it, don't you worry.
Which is the same drug that was administered to Lydia.
Upon arrival, Craig wasn't cooperative with the doctors because he was preoccupied with the notion that he was dead. He stated that, "These demons are my energy. I am dead. How can I have any energy?" When doctors attempted to intervene, Mr. C responded with,
Craig responded with,
"How can you help me? I am dead." When asked how it was possible to engage in a conversation with him if he were dead, he replied, "Maybe you are dead too." He believed his insides were being corroded by demons, and he stated that he had repeatedly sodomized himself to try and purge himself of the demons. The onset of his religiously themed delusional symptoms seemed to have begun after his traumatic brain injury, when he then became convinced that a miracle had occurred during the accident and he was now dead.
Oh, I see. So he retconned the whole situation and his brain was convincing him that he died in that accident.
Yes, and his was due to that brain injury.
Right.
So it obviously altered the makeup of his brain.
So Lydia and Craig, they believe their entire beings to be dead. But sometimes patients suffering from Cotard syndrome simply believe a part of them is dead, right?
Exactly. In 2018, a journalist named Amanda Ripley interviewed a man named Graham who was suffering from Cotard syndrome. And we'll talk a bit more about Graham's mysterious case right after this ad. And we're back. For many years, Graham believed his brain to be dead. He was convinced that he didn't have a brain, just a blank mind.
So did Graham have any physical abnormalities or any clear causes, any traumatic injuries that might have caused this?
Not at first. His brain showed no signs of abnormality, and doctors attempted to rationalize with him. They'd even ask Graham, if you don't have a brain, how can you walk? How can you talk? And Graham later admitted to Amanda that it was difficult to explain, but that at the time, he just knew that his brain was dead. He would say it was like a sponge that couldn't hold water. He didn't really have any thoughts or emotions at all. He said, I didn't feel anything, and I couldn't smell either. I completely lost my sense of taste or desire to eat. He didn't know what to make of it all. He didn't know how he could breathe or talk or walk when his brain was dead. He just knew that it was dead. His body just hadn't realized it yet. He could speak, breathe, and walk, but was unable to incorporate those abilities into a sense of feeling alive.
Yeah, how do you convince a person that they're alive when they think they're dead? Right? Like, did doctors prescribe any type of medication to him?
They prescribed antipsychotics and they tried psychotherapy, but it made no difference. And to Graham, this was just further evidence for what he already believed. The medication wasn't working because it couldn't work. He was already dead. So the doctors let him go home as long as he agreed to be monitored by a nurse and his brother. They kind of just agreed to disagree. He wasn't causing any harm, so they let him go home.
On more than one occasion, Graham would go missing and his family would find him at a cemetery. He spent his time walking around the graves and he had this is really creepy, this intense urge to be buried. He states, I just felt it was where I ought to be. It was the nearest thing to death that I could get. This would go on for many years to come until researchers heard of this man. They began a new series of scans and tests.
While there was nothing wrong with the structure of Graham's brain when they looked at it with an MRI, his PET scan was very problematic. A PET scan is a positron emission tomography scan, and it's an imaging test that helps reveal how your tissues and organs are functioning. It monitors all of the metabolic activity in the brain, and it shows all of the cellular processes that are going on at once. The scan can sometimes be used to detect diseases before it shows up on other imaging tests. Graham's PET scan was shocking because the activity across his brain was so low that it resembled somebody who was in a coma.
What? Yeah. Okay, so
terrifying.
This is really interesting. So he felt he was dead.
Yes.
And technology, these scans essentially showed that he was. With what's known about the amount of activity that should be taking place around the brain of someone who's conscious, it's nearly impossible for his activity rate to have been that low.
So there were a few problems with his brain scan. First, his front parietal network was low in activity, but so was his default mode network, which is a collection of neurons that form part of the front parietal network. That's the part that's associated with daydreaming and lets us make sense of the world in our own way. So let's say your neck is hurting and you know it's because you have bad posture. It kind of lets us make sense of what we're feeling and how it engages with the world. But Graham's default mode network was barely even functioning.
So why did he come to the conclusion that he was dead?
Well, Amanda offers the explanation that the brain can actually very easily fool itself. The brain doesn't like to be confused, so it comes up with explanations for why things happen, even if those explanations aren't true, to try to explain what it doesn't understand.
Right. It's going to find the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm.
There has to be an explanation for what's going on. Let's make up one, essentially, is what your brain does. And so because there was such low activity, brain is dead. The brain literally told itself that it was dead, which is bonkers.
Terrifying.
Thankfully for Graham, his delusions eventually lifted 3 years after they began. Graham can't pinpoint why he felt better or when. Perhaps it was a combination of medication or just a matter of time, but his delusions disappeared. He remembers suddenly thinking one day, "This is ridiculous. I have to have a brain." Doctors state that his recovery is due to a combination of drugs and just time that allowed for general brain repair. Gradually, Graham just began to feel more like himself.
That is both uplifting and exciting that his brain started working, but but it's also still terrifying. Yes. That they it just like kind of happened out of nowhere. Just mm-hmm. time heals all wounds. Yes. Or not all, but in this case it did. So what is the treatment for Cotard syndrome? Given that it can be a symptom of a multitude of larger issues, like schizophrenia, it's difficult to know what will help cure it unless each patient is thoroughly examined and administered specific treatment. Reports of patients with Cotard syndrome have indicated that ECT, electroconvulsive therapy, has tremendous advantages in the resolution of patient symptoms when medicine has failed.
And though the symptoms are extreme, people can get better with treatment, and they often do. Mrs. L is an example of a Lydia is an example of a patient who responded well to medication. Most people do best with cognitive behavioral therapy or psychotherapy, working along with a professional to discuss their beliefs and to just be able to state freely what's going on with them. It allows them to talk about what they're feeling, and it provides them with the tools necessary to find more healthy ways to think and act.
This has been terrifying. Exactly. And exciting. Rose, I want to say thank you so much for doing this research.
Thank you for all of your help throughout it.
Absolutely. It's really cool to learn about this stuff, and I'm excited for a lot more to come.
Yes, and if anyone's interested in researching any of these cases further, I will have all of the sources linked on our Anchor podcast page.
Beautiful.
Ooh.
Please, if you like this podcast, rate it, review it, and subscribe. I know you hear that on every friggin' podcast you listen to, but it's the truth. It really, really helps us find more people who are interested in neurological talk disorders.
Neurological talk disorders. And it also just helps us to create better content for all of you. So thank you for leaving a review and leaving your feedback and joining us on this week's episode of Brain Fluke.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Brain Fluke was created by Rose Stacy and is hosted by Brandon Ryder and Rose Stacy. Original music by Jeremy Verwise.